live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying.
Yeah, all right, here we go. Friday. Fun. Adam Hill is here. It's Cofield back in the Finley Toyota Studios. Griffin, we got Matt Never coming up to talk some Major League Baseball, also the Aviators, and then we'll go to the L.A. report with Mr. Vegas, Mr. L.A., Mr. Hawaii, Arash Marakazi. I'm surprised, Adam, you send over stories, as we all do, before these shows, and we trade stories and build a rundown. We try to be a little organized. I was surprised that you didn't want to have a moment of kind of doing the Barry Horowitz from wrestling and the pat on the back.
Sure.
Because I thought of you yesterday, and I am fully on board with what you were saying about 5-6 years ago, that there is an inevitability, if I can say it, an inevitability around college football, and that is the Big Ten and the SEC are going to try to take over and potentially go on their own. And the story came out yesterday that North Carolina and Clemson are setting their sights on the SEC. Had some conversations during Big Ten football media days with some national writers who said, you know what, no movement, everything's kind of settled down. 2031, that's when things are going to happen. Well, the chatter's begun, and this goes back to when you talked about it doesn't really matter what's going to happen with a lot of the Power Five schools because there is going to be an upper crust. And I've kind of bought into this, to what you were saying, where I've said now for probably a year and a half that I do believe that if the SEC and the Big Ten don't get what they want, like the Big Ten was really pushing hard, and you could tell Tony Petitti, the commissioner, because he said it for that four auto bid thing. Big Ten wants four automatic bids. They want, in the plan, 4+4. SEC would get four automatic bids. Then what that allows is a championship game and then a play-in weekend. 3-6. Check that. Yeah. Right? 3-6 and 4-5. And that's how they're going to determine the four teams that are in. And, hey, if someone gets upset, oh, maybe they get an LRG, they'll be the fifth team from the conference. But if they don't get agreement from the Big 12 and the ACC, then what they're going to do is strategically pluck two or three teams from each one of those conferences to debilitate them, weaken them, and I think this is part of the plan right here. Oh, ACC?
You're not playing along?
You're not playing along? Then we're just going to take Clemson and North Carolina, and you know what? Maybe we'll take Miami and Florida State, too. So there you go. There's four schools out. Good luck with your conference. Big Ten, you want to look at some Big 12 schools? Or maybe you'll take Miami. Big Ten, why don't you look at Kansas? We'll take your best basketball brand and an up-and-coming football power because now you're spending a lot of money. And that's how they're going to do it. And the reports came out yesterday, North Carolina, Clemson, interested.
Yeah, why wouldn't they be? I'm sure they are. And, look, I think the other level that – and you said I've been saying for so long. In fact, it got to the point where every time we talk about college sports, I would say it, and then you would be like, all right, talk about it right now, not the future.
Right.
But I think every move was geared toward eventually – being able to break off. And the other part of that, which I didn't really foresee, is that the ultimate goal is maybe to break off and start your own thing. But way better than that, far better than that, is to just keep that as the thing that scares everyone else. Okay. To where you stay in, but every time something comes up, no belief.
So you think this could be a plant? And there might not be movement. Like, again, going back to talking to college football insiders, who were like, it's all good until 2031. It's good to throw this at every once in a while to scare the bejesus out of them.
It's okay, we'll leave. Okay, what do you want? Well, you want at least four automatic bids. Okay. And they'll come back and they'll be like, are we going to leave still? They're like, okay, well, what else? Oh, you want some of our teams now too? Okay, take them. Oh, you want higher amounts of money that you're allowed to share with your school and less for everybody else? Okay. Oh, you want to have more on your rosters and everybody else? Okay, that's fine. Like, ultimately, staying is the most powerful thing because you can continue to get everything you want out of everybody else by threatening to leave, because all these other schools, the Big 12 understands that the the SEC and Big Ten can leave. And they do not want to be playing 1AA football.
Well, it would be a second 50. And here's what could happen naturally is with this $20.5 million cap to rev share, there are going to be some schools over the next 3 years that are Power 4 schools that are going to realize, like, we just can't do this. Like, we need a second division. It's not embarrassing to be in that second division, but financially we can't do it. And I'll give you a good example. A story just came out that Iowa State, who, by the way, I love Iowa State fans who are often calling Mountain West schools and, like, UNLV poverty schools. Watch your own situation. There's a lot of poverty out there because everyone's trying to keep up with the Joneses. Iowa State is facing a $147 million deficit. It is so serious that they were doing renovations to Hilton Coliseum, their legendary basketball arena. Got to stop it. They don't have the money. And they're also raising ticket prices. Justin Watkins done a really good job of looping us in on the fact that student athletic fees, like the average student athletic fees, which used to not exist, now they're bumping it up. Hey, $300 a semester, $500. There are some schools where the students are paying over $2,000 for athletic fees to support the athletic program. So there's naturally going to be a group of schools that are like, we seriously can't do this. This is stupid. Why are we trying to keep up with the biggest of the big boys? Let's get the hell out. We'll still have maybe some sort of entry to a tournament, but we just can't keep up with the biggest of the big.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, at some point there will be a breaking point, and there'll be a higher division, a lower division, but I think they're trying to hold it off as long as they can because they do enjoy still being a part of it while getting as many rewards as they possibly can.
Relegation! That's the idea would love.
The dream.
Let's bring in Matt Neverett. Can we have relegation with the Rockies? Can we do that? Rockies made a move. They are moving on from Ryan McMahon. We'll talk about the trade deadline here. Some moves are being made. Neverett, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's happening up in Sacramento with the Aviators for the week? It is beautiful up here, unseasonably cool. Yeah, the hot stove is heating up around the trade deadline. It's been a lot of fun to keep an eye out for already. It is by far the best trade deadline out of the big four, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because there's more, as I often say, baseball outside of the teams that don't try, like the Rockies and your Pirates and a few others, baseball has been proven to be the most wide open with 15 different organizations winning a world title this century. But if you have so many people within hailing distance of the dance floor, they all want to make moves. So Yankees make a move here with Ryan McMahon. Do you like the move? And I guess try to answer this one. What's more likely? McMahon goes to New York and just flops under the pressure, or we actually see him like, okay, now this is real, now this counts, this is a real atmosphere. I'm not saying, like, let me try, but I wonder if that's actually going to be a good thing for him.
Yeah, and you wonder if the dimensions, the small dimensions of Yankee Stadium kind of help to offset the Coors Field effect. I saw a note this morning that Ryan McMahon has had, I think it was like almost 63% of his career RBIs at home at Coors Field, which is the second highest number ever in the live ball era, behind only Carlos Gonzalez, another Rocky. I think he is going to do well in New York for that reason, and I like the move on there, and simply because they needed a third baseman. When they got rid of DJ LeMahieu and pushed Jazz Chisholm back to second base, that was basically them waving the white flag and saying, we need to get somebody at third. So this was a move, you know, maybe not necessarily the name, but this was a move that we all saw coming. Now, a lot of people, including myself, had said that Eugenio Suarez would have been the perfect fit, but he's going to, you know, get the most of any player, I would imagine, at the trade deadline in return. It's going to be a big-time deadline for a lot of positions, third base being one of them. But McMahon not having the greatest numbers on one of the worst teams in the history of baseball, on paper that doesn't look great. But you also got to keep in mind that the Yankees are picking up every single penny of the remainder of his contract, which is a lot.
Do you foresee a massive move somewhere, maybe even an unexpected one? I love that, you know, it just reminds me, New York just thinks they're getting everything, because I had a Mets fan ask me, hey, you think your guy Tarik Skubal's available? I was like, no, he's not. Sorry, he's not going to New York. But do you foresee any big names maybe nobody's talking about that could get moved?
That's tough. I mean, I could see Tarik Skubal in a Yankees uniform eventually. I mean, him and Paul Skeens might be the best one and two of future Yankees if you ask people around
Settle
the
down.
League right now.
Settle down.
I'm talking future. I'm talking 2-3 years down the line at least. But yeah, that's tough. You know, Dylan Cease is a big name, and he's rumored to be moved. Eugenio Suarez, over the last 162 games in Major League Baseball, has the second most home runs in the league behind only Aaron Judge. So those are going to be two pretty big names on the move that are going to garner a lot in return. I think right now every team that's in contention basically has their deadline mapped out as far as needing one position, needing one more starting pitcher. I don't really foresee there being any massive unexpected moves. I could be wrong. It happens all the time. But I think there are some big names that are rumored to be moved, and I think there's a lot of names that make sense. Those two guys really chief among them.
Matt Neverett, Voice of Baseball here in Las Vegas, is up with Cofield and company. Nice aggressive move by Seattle. Josh Naylor not hitting a ton of home runs, but reliable plays. That's being reliable. Driving in a lot of runs. But Naylor's a good pickup for Seattle.
Absolutely. You know, they're trying to get back to the postseason. They're a team that has, in a lot of people's eyes, the best starting rotation in Major League Baseball, especially once Bryce Miller gets back at 100% healthy. So just trying to bolster that offense is going to be a big-time, you know, deal for them. I think Julio Rodriguez is starting to heat up with the bat as well. So that's been the weakness, is the bats, and especially in the power department. Now, it's tough hitting at T-Mobile, almost called it Safeco, but tough hitting up there in the Pacific Northwest. I think a guy like Naylor's game translates no matter where. I think that's the perfect move right now for Seattle, and they're gearing up for a really strong second half. And like I mentioned, once that starting rotation gets fully healthy, they're the best in baseball, no doubt.
And you mentioned Suarez potentially being available for Arizona. It looks like they're going to probably trade off some of additional veterans. Merrill Kelly's interesting. If someone can get Zach Gallen right, that's a hell of a pickup.
Yeah, if Zach Gallen can be what he was at one point in his career, a Cy Young contender, that's going to be a huge move, especially if you can flip him for the right package. Now, I saw something from one of the Diamondbacks beat writers that they're expected to move five, maybe six additional players on top of Eugenio Suarez. So it looks like the Diamondbacks are blowing it up at the moment. I saw they're going in the midst of a long road trip right now, and Suarez, after their last game at home before they headed to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates today, spent some extra time basically just standing on the top step of the dugout, leaning over the railing, taking it all in. And it looked like a sad puppy watching its owner drive away for the day at work. And, you know, Suarez has been a big-time impact guy there. He has said he doesn't want to get moved, but it makes too much sense, especially with the power and especially for teams that need an offensive guy. You know, I think the Yankees and the Mariners were probably the top two. He's out of play for both of them. Keep an eye out for the San Diego Padres. I could really see them making a strong push for him, especially with the universal DH. Have Manny Machado at third every day, and Suarez doing the DHing, maybe even playing some first base. I could certainly see that as well.
Really? So you think that the Padres will play kind of both sides? If they deal Cease, to me that would be a sign that they're bailing. They shouldn't. They're good. So they're going to try to tweak, but because they have got a pitcher like that who might be top of the market, they can make some different moves, get better in areas they want to, yet they're still trading a very good pitcher.
Yeah, and if they make that move, it tells you that they really like what they have in their system coming up, and maybe they think they can unlock a guy that they have right now who maybe hasn't necessarily gotten the rotation to, or the opportunity, I should say, to pitch in the rotation. I think it'll be very telling. I think they could play it both ways. I remember the Red Sox had done that over the last couple of years. A.J. Preller loves to make moves sometimes just for the sake of making moves. So I could certainly see that, kind of playing both sides of the coin.
I wonder if this also suggests that they actually have confidence in Yu Darvish. He's not been good in his return, but maybe they see some upside there, and they're like, yeah, we'll be fine with Yu Darvish, and he'll get back to it.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting up here. He started this year on the injured list. He made his season debut, actually, against the Aviators in Las Vegas, which was a fun night to watch him in person. He's long been one of my favorite fantasy baseball pitchers to pick up. Yeah, that would tell you, if they do make that move, that they like what they've got from Darvish, not only from a stuff perspective, but from a health and longevity side of things as well.
Let's go back to the beginning of the conversation, and I think you referenced Ryan McMahon and the price and not having to give up a king's ransom. This is one of the things to keep an eye on. Who deals wisely? Who doesn't panic? And with the Mets, you just don't know with Steve Cohen. While his money's great, his drive is great, you don't want him kind of instructing you to act like jackasses and trade away great players. Like PCA was a Met prospect. They got 2 months of Javier Baez, and now they may be watching Pete Armstrong, you know, go 30-30 for the next 10 years on a basically a rental player situation. So there does have to be some discipline when some of the teams, the money aggressive teams, are trading.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see what Steve Cohen and the Mets do. It makes me think about that old John Wooden quote, don't confuse activity for progress. I think sometimes a lot of teams like the Mariners and the Padres and the Mets over the last couple of years, they make a move just to make a move, just to keep the fans happy and quell any of the doubts in the public sphere. So they're going to have to be really targeted, really pointed with their moves, really addressing maybe one or two main concerns. But yeah, I'll be very interested to see what Steve Cohen does. It would be going against a trend for him if they stood pat or made just the one move. He's been ultra aggressive. Hasn't necessarily paid off, but they've got a good core, obviously, with Juan Soto. They made the move today for Gregory Soto. Both guys in the big leagues right now at the last name Soto call Queens home in the New York Mets.
Let's talk A's and Aviators close. First with the A's. Boy, Nick Kurtz has been on fire. Now he's got his average in the 280s, and he actually has surpassed Jacob Wilson as the favorite for AL Rookie of the Year.
Absolutely. He's got the most extra base hits of any A rookie through this many games in the last 70 years. And looking at a number right now, and on base plus slugging since May 20th, Nick Kurtz, number one in Major League Baseball, ahead of Aaron Judge, ahead of Ronald Acuna, ahead of Cal Raleigh and Eugenio Suarez. He has been the best in baseball over the last two calendar months. And this is a guy who just finished up at college last year. I mean, he was taking college classes 14 months ago, and here he is as one of the most productive extra base hit machines in Major League Baseball already.
Aviators, you are on Sacktown right now, but they have Country Night coming up at home, and what's Superman Night?
Superman Night's going to be a fun one. That's coming up next week when the Aviators take on the Aces. That'll be on Saturday the 2nd. It's a jersey giveaway. It's like an Aviators jersey with a button-up, but it does the thing where you open up the chest and there's a Superman logo on the front underneath it. So that'll be fun. If only we could get Cam Newton out, he would have a field day with that one. Country Night this upcoming Thursday. I think my favorite promotion of the year in terms of the energy that it brings to the ballpark. Pre-game concert on the plaza. Gates open at 5 o'clock for the 7 o'clock game. They're open as early as they are all year long. There's line dancing lessons. Stonies will be there. I'm excited for the barbecue. They're bringing out a bunch of food trucks and a bunch of ribs. Really excited to check that out. There's a mechanical bull. There's a special jersey package you can buy, a special hat giveaway, and the Aviators wearing Country Night themed uniforms. A lot of denim and a lot of boots, but I think it's a really fun night, and it's going to be a packed house.
Yeah, never. It's all about the tight-fitting jeans and the parlance of Conway Twitty. You're looking forward to the H-Town trip as UNLV will be taking on Sam Houston State, playing them at the soccer stadium there. I haven't seen you out of practice. What the hell's going on here? It's very hot and sweaty out there. You want to see the new guys or not? Come on now.
Hey, if I were in the state, I'd be there. I've been up in Sacramento all week long. You know I'll be out there next week. When Dan Mullen said during the media days that they were going to be practicing earlier than in years past, I kind of shuddered. I'm not a morning person, but I'll deal with it to get out there and check out the guys.
they already moved it back a little bit, so it's not going to start as early as originally scheduled. So,
well, I think
perfect.
The Raiders might be thinking about that too, potentially. I don't think they will. I think they'll stay where they are, but yeah. The weather has been so nice in the mornings.
It actually has been.
And I think they're like, oh, it's fine. We can move it back now. And then it's like, no, it's going to be hot in like another day or two. I feel like that's going to happen. So we'll see how that plays out. Matt, what's it like being in a real major league ballpark? That's going to be great up there.
Oh, wow.
Use real with whatever amount of seriousness you want. All joking aside, the A's did do a good job of upgrading some of the facilities. I actually talked to the Rivercats manager, Dave Brundage, yesterday about some of the big-time upgrades. And, he goes, everybody's, complaining at the big league level. But for us here in AAA, it's been great. They upgraded the batting cages. The playing surface is awesome. Both clubhouses used at the minor league games have been upgraded. Brand new video board beyond the fence in right center. Tell me how much sense this makes. When they built this park in 2000, they put the video board on the batter's eye in straightaway center field. Dave Brundage told me that guys had complained about that for years and years and years. Now they added a bigger, wider green batter's eye. They've covered the old video board in a green tarp, and it's more of a horizontally laid out video board on the berm and right center field. And we've been lucky with the weather here as well. So overall, it's been a pretty good week. The Aviators have lost all three games. They're in the midst of a 7-game slide right now, their longest losing streak of the season. But they're trying to get off the mat tonight at this ballpark that has been really good to us so far.
Matt, what time is pregame tonight on radio?
I'll take the air at 6:30, Raider Nation Radio, AM 920. Joey Estes going against the Giants' number 9 prospect, Trevor McDonald, in the starting pitching matchup. Should be a good one. Aviators looking for their first win since before the All-Star break.
All right, pal, we'll see you.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you at practice next week.
That was a good pal, not a bad pal.
Sure.
Sometimes pal can be bad.
Usually it's bad, I feel like.
Depends on the tone.
I think it's bad.
All right, pal. Like that. That's not a good one.
Well, New Yorkers definitely use pal derogatorily.
I saw good news that Venezuela has qualified for the Senior League World Series. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. I'm sure they're going to love playing in it. Except that they can't.
Why not?
There's a travel ban in effect, Steve. It's very important that we keep kids that play baseball out of the country.
The teenage stars of Venezuelan baseball.
Very important.
Can't come here.
No. Denied visas.
Okay.
They actually had to travel to Colombia to try to get visas. Still denied. So then the coach was like, now we're stuck in Colombia. So they got to work their way home, and they're not going to be able to play.
More coming up on the weird week that has been 80s icons passing away. Rosh Markazi is very fired up to talk some wrestling and the passing of one Hulk Hogan.
Mr. L.A., Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, we got the Dodgers in Boston leading 3-2. Emmett Sheehan okay so far. We'll get to Dodger baseball in just a couple minutes. Plenty of stuff going on around here in Las Vegas and a lot in L.A., so we bring on Arash Markazi with Adam Hill and Cofield. Arash, what's up, buddy?
Not much. How are you guys?
We're good. It's been a weird week with Malcolm Jamal Warner passing away and Ozzy and now Hulk Hogan. And I know on Sporting Trib Live you guys talked a lot about the Hulkster passing away.
Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously when you look at the last 10 years of his life, polarizing, severe, controversial. But, you know, when I look back to my childhood, you know, just someone growing up, you know, but begging my dad to drive me to Caesar's Palace in WrestleMania 9 to see the Hulkster beat Yokozuna for the championship. He's a big part of my childhood. So, yeah, listen, these things happen in threes. Sad that's the case. And three big figures from my childhood, for sure.
You had a guy on the show, Josh Tariff. Is that a new member of the cast, or is he a wrestling dude? What did you guys get into when you were talking about Hulk?
Yeah, so Josh had a lot to say. I mean, Josh, big poker player, big wrestling fan, really great sports host, and so we've been really blessed to have him. So I mean, he has something prepared. I mean, normally with the show, you know, we kind of give each other the topic and we kind of go on for a couple of minutes, but you know, Josh had something, you know, prepared, and we he tweeted it and I retweeted it as well. Again, you know, you cannot write the history of professional wrestling in WWE and WrestleMania without talking about Hulk Hogan. And so, but when you have situations like this, when you have figures who do things post-career, you know, whether, you know, go down the list of players or people that this happened to, like O.J. Simpson or Pete Rose or whatever, it is a complicated history. So you have to mention that while also mentioning the significance that they had.
Well, in the world of wrestling in the 80s, I mean, he did take McMahon's company to another level. The crossover appearance in Rocky was amazing with Thunder Lips. He did an awesome job there. I mean, you can't, well, we talk about the other side of his personality and the downside. We do have to mention that wrestling, I don't know if it, you know, it couldn't have been as big, but he did take it to another level because he was such a big crossover guy. I saw the clip of him sitting there next to Johnny Carson, making Johnny look like he was, you know, 5'2". I mean, he was a massive character, and certainly people showed out. I mean, to get 93,000 in the Silverdome, you mentioned WrestleMania that was here. His impact on wrestling is insane.
Yeah, I mean, again, with becoming that sort of like transcendent figure where you may not know anything about wrestling, but you've heard of Hulk Hogan because you've seen him in Rocky, or you've seen him on The Tonight Show or Saturday Night Live or the rock and wrestling thing with the MTV back in the day. I mean, he really made it something where, you know, for years and years and years when it was a regional territory event, you know, this wouldn't be on the cover of magazines or on the television shows and things like that. And so Hulk Hogan really brought it into the mainstream in a way that it had never been before.
How much did you watch in the 90s? Because I actually, some of my favorite stuff that he did in wrestling was in WCW when he turned heel, and then all of a sudden he had the kind of the dark beard with the blonde mustache, and there was NWO and all that stuff, and there was just turncoating and attacking people and chairs. I actually thought that was kind of a cool part of his career.
It was amazing because, again, I mean, normally speaking, you know, when you leave WWE, WWF at the time, I mean, that could have been it. But his second act in WCW with the NWO, when they, you know, packed stadiums as well, Georgia Dome, and, you know, beating the WWF at the time, which was unheard of, that was huge as well. And then again, like, he comes back to WWE at the time, and goes up against The Rock at the sold out Sky Dome in Toronto, has another big, you know, his second act and his third act was really impressive, you know, and it's unfortunate that post career and really like these last 10 years of his career, like, was what it was. And I was at his last appearance. It was at the Intuit Dome. It was the first Raw on Netflix. He comes out. It was a surprise, and he got booed, and it was what it was. I mean, you know, it's in Los Angeles, whether it was the politics, whether it was obviously what he said that was recorded, you know, it certainly tarnished the end of his time.
It didn't bother you at WrestleMania 9 that he wasn't even supposed to win the title?
Listen, as a kid, I was thrilled. I mean, that was sort of like a bonus. I thought it was over. I thought Yokozuna had beaten Bret Hart, and I'm supposed to drive home really upset. And then Hulk Hogan comes out to save the day, and obviously we find out, like, afterwards, you know, with his creative control, you know, tonight's the night, brother, where he's going to win the title no matter who's on the card.
That, to me, says all that I need to know about him.
What, he's a turncoat behind the scenes.
Yeah, I didn't even know
that he stole it.
All the other stuff. I do wonder, like, you kind of got into it about the complicated history. Just from a journalistic perspective, and you've been in the business a long time, I guess, like, how do you determine when you're going to talk, like, how you're going to talk about people? And a lot of people have complicated histories, and I, like, when I talk about this issue, there's a name that is always in my mind, and I won't even say it right now, but we decide, oh, no, we like that person, so we're not going to talk about their complicated history. But if we don't like them, then we do talk about their complicated history?
Yeah, no, listen, I think it's in the first paragraph, Adam. Like, I don't think you can write this obituary without using the word, you know, complicated, conflicted, polarizing, however. And then sort of like in paragraph 2 and 3, like, you really got to get into, like, what happened. And then certainly he was very public about, like, his politics in terms of, you know, one of, like, the main speakers in the Republican convention. And a lot of the pictures that I've seen that have been used on the front pages of papers, and I know it was on the front page of the Review Journal today, but I forgot what picture they used. But some of them are that, you know, he's carrying his shirt, and it's like the Trump Vance shirt and a gun. Big platform for him. I mean, whether you agree with him politically or not, I mean, for him to get that moment in time with the person who is now the president of the United States, that was a big deal. So 100%, this is not something, if you're going to read the obit in any legitimate paper or like outlet, it's in paragraph 1.
I know on Sporting Trib Live, and we're talking to Arash Markazi, that you guys had a discussion about Donald Trump and his latest thing that he put out this week, amongst many, about college sports and NIL. What'd you make of this, and what do you think? Is it going to have some kind of impact?
Listen, I mean, there's only so much he can do, and I'm so fascinated, obviously disturbed also, but fascinated by, like, just like so random what intrigues him and what, like, interests him and, like, what he wants to tackle. Like, I don't disagree that we need a little bit of clarity in terms of what colleges can and can't do. When you have universities actually paying players as employees, like, like, do they even have to go to class at that point? Like, aren't they just employees? So there is some clarity that I think should come. I mean, I think that'll come through the conferences and the universities. I don't know what his task force is going to accomplish, but, you know, you go down to, like, the name of, like, the Washington football team and all this other stuff. It's so kind of interesting, like, what he chooses to be interested by and what he wants to be involved in.
It's, I think the college stuff has gotten the most attention this week and the name changes and that sort of thing. But the diving into and the merging of politics and sports is it's not stopping there. I think that an even bigger story should be the political influence potentially on the Ali Act going away, which would be terrible for fighters, just awful. And it sounds like politics are going to get involved there too. I don't know what the right thing to do. I think, as you said, I think there needs to be some regulations and some guidelines. I don't know that it should come from the federal government necessarily, especially because I don't know what the final solution is going to be from the federal government in their intervention in sports. But I can promise you this. It's going to be good for the rich people and not good for the athletes. That's it. Plain and simple.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know who's in his ear, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're already planning this UFC bout at the White House, which I'll be very intrigued if Adam Hill is going to be there. Listen, you know who's in his ear. You know who was sitting front row at the inauguration. So this is the time and place where, like, everyone checks whatever, like, ethics that they have at the door, and they got 3 years to get whatever bill passed or law passed or whatever they have to do. It is a very intriguing time, guys.
Rosh is with us. Was there a big radio, sports talk radio anniversary in L.A.? I think Mason and Ireland are 21 years in now, right?
They are, and they just re-upped. I'm just really thrilled for them. Again, you know this better than anyone, Steve, and we've talked about this. You know, like, what does the future of sports talk radio look like in this time period of podcasts and things like that? But I still think it holds such an important role, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the air with you guys. You know, I love podcasts just as much as the next guy, but the immediacy of breaking news happening and me being able to turn on the air and listening to Steve Caulfield in Vegas or Steve Mason and John Ireland in Los Angeles, folks who have really the heartbeat of that community. So thrilled to hear Steve Mason and John Ireland coming back, or at least they've renewed for a few years. And I say that just because, you know, John has a lot on his plate, you know, as the play-by-play voice of the Lakers. So great news there.
Well, let's also bring up the point that 21 years together is a pretty damn long run. One, from the station side, to not blow one of them out. But two, as Adam knows, and I'm not talking about us, but radio shows generally will blow up at some point. Like, people just can't stand each other when they're around each other every day. And we've heard the stories about Mike and Mike. The Golics really, as a family, can't stand Greeny. I don't know Mason or Ireland. Like, when you're around them, what are they like, and how have they survived? Survives a strong word. But how have they withstood the perils of normal radio teams where at some point someone's like, I can't stand you anymore?
No, but it's a great question. They've broken, and here's, I forget whether they were forced to break up or they broke up themselves a couple of times. So it's not like they've been together 21 years continuously. No. I mean, listen, they began on the mighty 690 back in the day in San Diego that you could hear crystal clear in Los Angeles. At one point, Steve Mason moved to New York to do talk, then came back, and then they reunited with 710 in Los Angeles, and then I think they parted ways with John. Like, I think John got fired. You know, when something like that happens, really hard for a duo to get back together, but they really are a great tandem. Again, they have their own separate lives. They're not like, they're good friends, but they really could not be more like polar, like opposites in terms of when you hang out with them. So, yes, listen, they have not been together continuously. And sometimes I wonder if that's a good thing, where your time apart taught you that you were so much better together.
I'll bring this one up, and this is kind of out of the blue, but I was listening to, again, to speak to, you just mentioned the, you know, fired, guys are moving on. Sometimes people won't go back to companies they used to work with either, right? They're bitter about it. I heard Rich Eisen go on Dan Patrick's show. Rich Eisen, Patrick was doing Eisen a favor by, yeah, you know what's going on. You got your ESPN show coming up. The spot closes up with Rich Eisen's like, hey, Dan, I'd like you to be my first guest on my new ESPN radio show. There's silence for a second, and Dan Patrick's like, not going to happen. I will not go on ESPN. I was like, wow, okay. There's some lingering bitterness in Dan Patrick's mind, and he's like, not going to do it.
That is interesting. You know, Rich would be the first to admit that Dan really taught him a lot about how to make this thing work on his own in terms of, you know, whether the show was streaming on Peacock or Roku or YouTube and whatnot. Rich, and I've been on the show several times, he brick by brick this thing together. I mean, this was sort of a passion project for him. He does not get enough credit for the Hollywood who's who. He gets to actually show up to that set. They do it at the AT&T studios in El Segundo. So, you know, that was sort of a DirecTV exclusive show that has just survived. Like, it survived the pandemic. It survived being canceled by DirecTV. It survived being canceled by Peacock and whatnot. So I am surprised by that. But listen, I think ESPN told Dan Patrick when he left, like, you're never going to get another job again. And Dan was before this sort of, you know, like, independent content creator culture that we're in right now. He's like, screw you guys. I don't need you. I'm going to build something by myself.
All right, we got to close on this one. I saw a tweet up at Rosh Markazi on Twitter. Is there a restaurant that's been closed? Was this place in the works? What is Saint and Second in Manhattan Beach?
So Saint Second in Manhattan Beach has been under construction, and I don't know what happened, but it's 5 years. And again, it's just a restaurant that. But by the way, Steve, and I did not know this. They have a location in Woodland Hills. They have a one in Long Beach. I'd never heard of this place. Okay. I went there, highly recommended, had the burger, had the steak sandwich so far. I'm gone. Great, but you know what? It has been since the pandemic. You go back to like March of 2020, this place has been under construction, and finally they just opened this week. So I had to take a picture of it and say, folks, it's finally open. But extremely good spot.
Nice. Well, I don't want to get too hardcore into Woodland Hills references, but I don't know how often you go back. Where Western Bagel is and Jerry's Deli used to be, there actually was a cool build-out of a sports bar right there on that same plaza, not the one in the corner that used to be like the Dirty Bowl or something. But there was one next to Western Bagel. They couldn't survive. I mean, surviving now as a restaurant and bar, even in a place where there's plenty of money and housing costs is super expensive in the Valley, not easy.
It is not. It is not. And by the way, so when you find a way to, like, open, I support local. Nothing against the chains out there, but yep. I always try to support local.
There you go.
I'm just glad you're talking about your hometown of L.A., and you should stay there.
Oh, wow.
Listen, you know what? The next time you come to Manhattan Beach, by the way, this guy comes to Manhattan Beach. He takes a picture of the beach. He doesn't call me up. He doesn't do anything. You know what?
What?
I assume you're in Vegas.
Yeah. I assume you're in Vegas. Wow, is that Mr. Vegas sandwich really has splintered the relationship.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Yeah, Arash is like, it's all worth it. All right, Arash, we'll see you, buddy.
All right, see you. Bye.
Wow. I'm surprised you didn't bite on the bagel reference.
No.
I like that place. I missed the deli, though, Jerry's Deli that was there. So I know you're not super familiar with that area, but, you know, I drop some knowledge on Arash every once in a while.
Sure.
Why not?
From everywhere, according to him.
According to him. Grab bag is on the way. You know, we got to get into Shedeur Sanders and where he is on the depth chart and also kind of how he how he reacted to that. The questions about two different speeding tickets within like a month of each other didn't really seem to take it too seriously.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, closing things out here at Treasure Island. Thanks to Mr. Ruffin and Company for having us out. Golden Circle, 55-plus TVs. Great Friday spot, great weekend spot as well for sports all week long. this menu with the brand-new spicy chicken sandwich, Loco Mocos. A lot of folks on Cofield & Company, a big fan of the chicken salad sandwich. So get on down here, free parking as well. And they have a slew of restaurants. They're going to be introducing a new Asian restaurant soon. So we'll tell you about that in the coming weeks in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So we didn't get too deep into when someone iconic passes away like Hulk Hogan. How do you talk about him if they have, you know, a track record that was kind of smeared with some bad stuff? Which brings up a story that I think I've told a few times. Going back to, well, I guess I should say this. When you cover someone and you've got these negative stories, you're kind of hammering them, right? And then they pass away within a month. Like, do you go on the air and you're like, great guy. Like, wait, you were just doing coverage of him 3 weeks ago. There's also the too soon, hey, I want to wait a week. One of those moments actually happened to me. I'd have to look up what year he passed away. Probably 2099. When Payne Stewart passed away, sure. The weekend leading into it, he was at a golf tournament. And he had done some, like, stupid Asian impression. And we were blasting Payne Stewart, right? Blasting golfers in general for that kind of country club, you know, racist attitude. And then he passed away in a plane crash. And I remember prepping for the show, and we were talking to good old Sports Pig. And Pig's like, I'm going to say whatever I want. Like, I'm glad he's gone. I'm like, well, I don't know if you want to do that. But he's like, hey, do what you want, man.
It's just complicated. And I think, you know, people are hypocritical about this. And I myself am.
What were you saying earlier about...
So,
like, you lay off people you like.
And I think there could be part of it is how, you know, Hulk Hogan's an old man. So, fair game. If somebody dies tragically, we don't bring up.
I thought about that part, yeah.
I mean, is that how it works? Because I do think people are hypocritical about this. A lot of people don't like Hulk Hogan. I hate Hulk Hogan. Not just for the brief, because everybody's like, oh, the one bad thing he said. Like, no, there was a lot. And he was clearly that person.
Yeah.
I don't like him. But then I'm like, oh, he dies, and you're like, oh, you have to talk about the complicated legacy. So, and I, listen, I'm purposely not saying who I'm talking about, but somebody dies tragically, and then even I, who like the person, was like, ah, I don't think we should talk about the negatives here. But is that right? I don't think it is.
Probably not.
And so I do think when somebody dies that you don't like or don't, like, you should have the same
cover the story.
Attitude of who it is.
Because there are people out there listening. I don't know. If I'm not wishing death upon this person, but if Brett Favre passed away,
right?
We know people personally who, if they heard us talking about all these great things about Brett Favre, and the same people would be like, you know what Brett Favre was like,
right?
Now you're insulting me,
right?
So
it is, and I guess it also matters if they did like one documented thing that was bad or wrong. Or, like, a lot of things. I mean, yeah. That does matter, I suppose, on some levels. So, like, it is tricky because, I do feel like, there are certain people that would die and people would get outraged that you mentioned the bad parts about their life. But then other people are like, well, I don't like that guy, so you can say whatever you want about him when he dies. Right. Like, I don't think it's fair to do that.
I think we're pretty consistent for the most part.
Sure.
Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So, just to get an update on Shamar Stewart, the Bengals' first-round pick, the compromise was... Stewart agreed to contract language that could void future guarantees. In return, the team moved up roughly $500,000 of a signing bonus payment to be paid out immediately. So they came to an agreement.
So hopefully he doesn't rob a bank.
I don't think he's going to have a good rookie year. I think this is going to hurt him. Frankly, he already had some issues. Like, they took a guy who has upside but didn't produce a lot.
He's already
in college,
more of a developmental guy anyway.
But I admired him and his agent for standing up against this nonsense. Don't sign a deal you're not comfortable with, because let's go back to whatever's going to happen with Christian Wilkins and the Raiders. I mean, it's your future. You had mentioned an earlier guest about, you know, guarantees and health coverage, and there's a lot of football players at the end of their career that owner who, you know, wanted to bust his chops ain't going to be there when he really needs them, you know, in his 50s or 60s. Well, he might be dead, the owner, but you get my point. The kids won't be there for him.
For sure.
All right, Griffin, great job. Good setup down here. Adam, have a good weekend. It's Cofield. Check us out over the weekend. The show lives on up on social media. Check out our YouTube page at Cofield & Company, TikTok, Facebook, IG. We'll have videos out over the weekend, including more UNLV football coverage first couple days of practice. We'll see you.